Oh man, it's good to be recording again with you, man.
Indeed.
This stint, I don't know, this stint that we've gone through basically this for this year thus far has been the least amount of episodes we've put out since we started.
Almost 10 years ago.
In 2 months, it'll be
our 10 year anniversary is coming up.
Just wild. But yeah, so we've been, I've been a little bit occupied. This is totally on me. You can blame me for all of this.
I want you to know, I'd be prepared to blame you regardless of what the circumstances were.
Yeah.
I just want you to know.
Right.
I would be prepared for that.
That's fair and expected.
Yeah.
Last episode, we talked about asking for prayers for Haley and unborn baby Mary, and Mary is here.
She's born.
She has been born. Mary is doing well currently.
She was born very early.
So very early.
If you missed the last episode.
Incredibly early. She was, I think, 27 weeks when she was born. She was 2 pounds. She was immediately baptized and possibly confirmed. I have some suspicions on whether or not she was actually confirmed because I don't know. It was a deacon, and I'm not sure if the archbishop has given the faculties to the
but he
deacon.
Did perform.
He at least blessed Mary with holy oils.
Okay. So there's reason to believe that she is.
But I have not gone through. Anyway, that's a...
I think we give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think he would do it unless he had the faculties.
I don't think he was prepared to do it, and I asked him. And so he was like, oh.
But he had the oils.
But he had the oils.
So that means something. You know, that you don't just like walk around.
So, well, I mean, you know. Anyway, at least baptized, at the least.
Definitely baptized.
Which is fantastic.
That's the most important thing.
That's the indelible mark you definitely want.
Yeah, I mean, confirmation, also great.
Right. I love the Holy Spirit.
Uh-huh.
Big fan. She, about 4 days, I think, into her being here, she had to have surgery, a pretty intensive surgery, intrusive surgery, over 6 hours of surgery.
Long surgery. They thought it was going to be much shorter, but it was longer.
It was much longer. The esophagus had to be connected to her stomach. And afterwards,
I agree. I think that you're going to want that.
You're going to want that. The surgeon said afterwards it was the most difficult surgery he's ever had to do.
Which is like cool, sort of. It's not something you like really want to hear.
Not pumped about.
Yeah.
But that was the case. Mary's doing well right now. Thanks be to God. Haley's doing well. Lady Haley's doing well right now. She's recovering. She's been just absolutely a champ. You know, when you go through, obviously, pregnancy and giving birth, there's a lot of side effects for women with the hormones going everywhere, right?
Sure.
And then on top of the stress of a newborn baby that's only 2 pounds, and then on top of surgery, and then on top of trying to keep some sort of normalcy with our other children, there's a lot that has to be handled.
Well, and especially for you guys, you're not even in the same town.
We're 2 hours away from where the hospital's 2 hours away from where we live. She's just been such a beacon of how, like, when I married Haley, like, when I was going to marry Haley, it's like, what is it about her that has drawn me to her, you know, I want to be with her, you know, in marriage.
Are we going to talk about this on the show?
Yes. One of the things was just her maternal instincts and just how good of a mother I knew she was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a good answer.
This
not like, the answer. I'm not sure that that's actually what you would have said on the day one of being married, but
that is one of the, that is one.
I'm
of
just
the
giving you a hard time.
But she's done incredibly well. It's definitely an opportunity. You know, before a few weeks ago, I said like, man, I can't wait to see what the Lord has in store for you for Lent.
Yeah.
And
I've been thinking about, dude, I'm so glad you said that. I have thought about you saying that to me so many times. Like, oh, how the turns have tabled,
yeah.
My friend.
It's like, man, I should not have said that. That was just a mistake.
Yeah.
The old pride, I guess, really got in the way there.
You deprived me of a gift. I should have received something this Lent. And now
and yet it was me.
You've taken it from me.
So it's been really, I can't thank you guys enough for the prayers. And there's been so many people who've, you know, people I haven't even heard from in so long reach out to me, meals, helping with kids, organization of transportation, because both of my cars, this is a whole nother story, but both my cars went out the day before Haley, was it the day before? The day before Haley gave birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was really difficult. Literally the day
and
before.
And still not doing great.
Both cars are still not doing great. So there's been a lot of things. Also, if there's a guy I met at the Oklahoma City Hospital with his wife. He came up to me and he was like, "Hey, man, I heard about your show. We've been praying for you. So, you know, I'm so glad to hear everything." And I was so distracted. I was actually on a business call when he came up to me on my earpods were in, so he didn't know I was on a phone call. And if you're listening, man, I'm so sorry because I felt like that I did not interact well with you. I was very distracted. So anyway, I apologize for that. But it's just been a whirlwind of the last, you know, 2 months. It's been very interesting to see how just my kids have had to adapt as well. Kind of a funny story, I guess. We were at the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass last weekend. We're in Oklahoma City, and a shout out to Father Foshi over there in the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City. Fantastic priest, good friend of the show, and gives phenomenal homilies. Very traditional, very as far as like reverent liturgy, takes worshiping our Lord seriously. Big fan of him. But we were there at Mass, and Leo, my 6-year-old, you know, kind of nudges me, and like it was kind of an in-depth homily, and I'm like, yes, he's gonna ask me a question. I can tell, like, he's about to ask me a question. Yeah. I'm like, yes, good homily. Something resonated with him.
His wheels are turning.
He goes, "Hey, Dad, when do you think I'll have the opportunity to meet J.B. Mooney?" I said, "I don't know, son." J.B. Mooney is a professional bull rider.
I was gonna say, like, who is J.B.? Trying to decide, like, if I should know who that is.
He's a professional bull rider who rode Bushwhacker, which is like the, you know, one of the best bulls. He doesn't even ride bulls anymore because he's broke his back or whatever. But anyway, like, he's one of the top, you know, best bull riders of all time. That's what my son was thinking in Holy Mass.
Sure.
Like, when am I going to have the opportunity? Is it today? To be able to meet?
Can it be today? Can we swing by?
Can we meet with JB Mooney? Anyway, it was, fatherhood is always one of surprises.
All the time.
So anyway, my deepest thanks and gratitude. I know I say this a lot. I've been having to say this a lot. My gratitude and for all of the charity that people have been showing me. And, you know, sometimes it's even hard sometimes to receive it. You know, just you want to be in control and you want to help. You know, you sure. Don't want to necessarily put anybody out or have, you know, everybody's busy. It's not like that they're not busy. Family of eight over here cooking me dinner. It's like, it's not like that they don't have things going on. But the charity's been overwhelming, and it's hard sometimes. Sometimes just saying how grateful you are can fall flat. It can just sound like a platitude.
Yeah.
But in sincerity, my wife and I both have just felt all the love and support and prayer, and we are very incredibly grateful.
And please continue, because little Mary is she's a long road.
Long road ahead. She's still obviously in the NICU.
She's just a few pounds. She can't eat.
Yeah, I mean, she's still too.
Has she been able to eat anything?
No, not yet. We're hoping next week she'll be able to have like food in her stomach, you know, of some sort. But there's no guarantee there. You know, her heart rate and heart blood pressure and oxygen levels are all things that are always with NICU babies. You know, it's like you turn one little thing up and one little thing down and one little thing up, and let's see how she responds. You know, and then it's like, because you can't put too much oxygen in them because it could blind them, put too much pressure in their brain for bleeding. But she needs to have oxygen and she needs to have that heartbeat going. And so, like, it's just this balance of of trying to find the right formula that where she responds to the best of her ability without long-lasting side effects.
I want to give a shout out to the Ronald McDonald House.
Yes. Yeah, great. Yeah, because they...
what a great charity.
Yes.
I mean, truly, they're just like, what a gift.
Yes, because what they basically have given us is a hotel suite, basically, in the hospital, where we have... where all of our kids can stay, and we're staying in there. They provide it to us completely free.
Yeah.
It's a completely free gift, and they have dinners that are made there and everything, and so it's like... You know, we're 2 hours away, and so
they even make dinner for you.
Yes,
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
It's not Catholic, but man, what a worthy cause.
Absolutely, and it's been a lifesaver for us because every time we'd have to be getting a hotel room, and dude, hotel rooms.
It would be undoable.
It would be because I've had to get one a couple times. You know, before we had the Ronald McDonald House, it's like $150 a night.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be in a situation that's much different. It'd be
very difficult.
Yeah. Trying to like beg someone to one of you to stay on a couch.
But you know what? Even our fellow friend and patron Jason Zimdars, him and his wife Katie have been incredibly gracious to open up their home for us.
Yeah.
They've brought us food. It's just been really great.
It's good to have a village.
Amen to that.
A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're drinking a really interesting bottle of scotch today. It's from a distiller that I just am really not very familiar with. It's Royal Brockla. It's a Highland Scotch. But, man, first of all, I would have thought that this is an Islay Scotch.
I'm reading the tasting notes and they're hilarious.
What do they say?
So it's dessert in the workshop is what...
So this is the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. They always come up with funny names for the bottlings.
Yeah, it says, on the floor of the carpenter's workshop sits a bowl of custard topped with toffee chunks, marshmallow, sweet pea flowers, and grapes.
And grapes. On the floor of the workshop sits a bowl.
Full of custard.
I don't know where we are in relation to that bowl. Look, are we next to the bowl? Are we... in the bowl, right?
I don't know.
But, man, it's just so good. And from a distiller, I've ever heard of. It doesn't, it's not familiar to me at all.
Mm-mm.
But man, this is a good dram.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, it's got a little bit, like an iodine quality to it, which typically you get from the Islay Scotch. It's not peaty or smoky. But
it sure is it just a packs, dessert.
Yeah, man, it really just packs a lot of. So if you see Royal Brockla, and you're into that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
pick it up.
That's right. Really cool thing also, just about when we can get on past my personal life stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
One really awesome thing is that. A priest here in the diocese who swung by dropped off a first class relic of Saint Gemma.
Yeah, dude.
For us and said, basically, this is mine. I'm giving her to you until, till everything passes. She'll take care of you. And it's
when he
been,
comes back to pick it up, be like, we're not, nope, not passed yet.
So I've been having still a conversation with St. Gemma, and she still has a lot of work to do with us. And she's asking and requesting to hang out for a little bit
longer.
In fact,
she commands you.
Yeah.
So leave her be.
St. Gemma has been a huge, huge blessing
for us.
She's
a big healer.
Big healer.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool just to have a first class relic.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, what an amazing thing to have the, you know, the body of a saint, first class relic with you just in your hotel room.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
So we're in Lent at this point, and we're going to talk about temperance.
Indeed. Temperance is one of those virtues that I see all the time, like kind of, in, you know, there's... when we were teaching our kids about temperance a long time, several years ago, you know, so like homeschooling, very, you know, they're, you know, young kids. And we went through this series, I guess you could call it, but it was just, they had definitions. Like, what is temperance? And I really enjoyed, I really got a lot out of just hearing these descriptions of the virtues for children. Because they were just simplified in such a way, like someone had done a really good job surmising, you know, condensing this into a very digestible small bite. So I always remember temperance. Temperance, they said, temperance is having a healthy amount of everything. A healthy amount of everything, right? And I just have thought about that. It's just a good definition. Now, it's not quite as good as maybe what Thomas Aquinas would say, right? But we tend to, I think sometimes...
It's a good thing for the for children to kind of sink their teeth into, unintended.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, on what it means. You know, it's the fourth, it's one of the four cardinal virtues. Great way to teach your kids on the cardinal virtues, just to memorize what they are. You know, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance is peanut butter, jelly, French toast. That's, you know, so prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance, peanut butter, jelly, French toast.
It's good.
That way you can remember it.
You will, and now you will.
So fourth one, the lowest of, I would say, of the four is temperance. And it is very much in tune with what we have going on during Lent.
Sure.
Because you have to have mastery before glory.
Yes, dude. Yes. I think we tend to think about sometimes temperance as being a limiting factor, right? That temperance means we don't have something. But I think a fuller understanding of temperance is also embracing that positive side of like making sure that we have that healthy amount of everything, right? So it's not just about not eating, you know, another piece of cake or not having another drink or not fill in the blank, but it's also about you have to remember to have that positive, you know, it's like, okay, I am going to work out. Okay, like the temperate man does in fact exercise when, you know, at the right time, in the right way, in the right amount, right? And so that's just something to think about, that because the virtues, sometimes we do that. We kind of pigeonhole them into just like kind of a shade of what they really are, and we forget that no, the fullest expression of all of these things actually is positive. The virtues are, they're always a positive. They're not no's. They're actually yeses. You know, it's not about just saying no to things. It's about saying yes to sobriety. Right? It's about saying yes to freedom. Because when you give in to your will, to your appetites, to have, I'm just going to use that other piece of cake because I'm just talking to myself. You actually are, you're losing some of your freedom, right?
Your humanity.
That's right. You are surrendering your own will to the lower passions.
Animal-like passions.
That's right, right. And so in that way, some of the fathers, you know, have used the analogy of you begin to stoop like an animal towards the earth.
Well, Plato even talked about this.
Is that who it?
I mean, a lot of
I know a lot of people. Lot of people have used this analogy.
You end up like chewing the cud, like cows do, and they're always just looking down, eating, just, and they're never being able to look up and seeing the world, seeing creation, seeing the beauty,
or raising your eyes to heaven,
right?
And so that's the yes. That's the yes side of temperance, and it's true of all the virtues, that the best way, the fullest understanding of thinking about what they mean in our lives, what, you know, how to put them in practice, is to think about them in that positive aspect where you say, what is it? What does it mean? What should I be reaching out for? Okay, because the virtuous life is not an empty-handed life. It's a life of abundance, right? Where your arms are full of gifts, okay? It's not about the ones that you have to let go of. It's about the better ones that you reach out and take hold of, right? Because it truly is a full life. And so we're going to be talking about temperance, and I just want to kind of set the stage that way, that this is really what temperance is. It's about saying yes to the good things in life, having that healthy amount of all things. Because when we stoop towards the earth and indulge and give in to these animalistic passions that we have, we actually don't have room for all things. And so there are goods in this life that we have to push aside so that we can have more of these lower goods. If that makes sense.
Yeah, this is so kind of big. So I was reading St. John Cassian today, and I love St. John Cassian. If you check out the book called The Institutes. It's a great book to read, especially even during Lent. It's several, basically, conferences that he put on, the talks that he gave, and they compiled it to a book. But to kind of piggyback
off... Very old school.
Yes, and he's a little bit more extreme probably than what you're painting the picture right now. But he does talk about how the fires of vices get put out by the waters of virtue.
Hmm.
Which I find to be... very, it's great imagery.
Yeah, very baptismal.
Right. So, okay, before, I know you did this episode, or, you know, you're working through, you compiled the notes, but I was reading St. John Cassian, and I came across this thing I'd never heard before, and I thought it was really interesting. I took a little bit of a deep dive on it, and it's hard to find... It's hard to find some of the commentary that I was hoping to find on this.
Yeah.
But here's what he says, okay?
So this is Cassian.
St. John Cassian. He's talking about the sins of Sodom, okay? Which we know Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah.
You know, we know what their sins are.
Yeah. If you don't, go ask your dad. I'm just saying, I don't know. Go ask an adult.
Yeah.
If you don't know what they are. I don't. That wasn't supposed to be weird. Like, you gave me this very weird look.
Well, and like, then, you're assuming. Anyway. So he's talking about the sins of Sodom, and he says, "How did your sister Sodom sin except by eating her bread in surplus and abundance? And because of their surplus of bread, they had been set ablaze with inextinguishable fire of the flesh. They were consumed by God's judgment of fiery brimstone from heaven." So he makes this claim, and it's multiple paragraphs, that the first sin of Sodom was not the sins of the flesh.
Mm. How interesting.
But that Sodom had an abundance of this very sweet bread, and they just fed the appetites to the max, which caused then even more sin.
That's so interesting because, you know, there's a well-established link between your food appetites and your sexual appetites.
Right, but I had never heard that before, had you? Have you heard that before?
Well, no. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Okay. So before the break, we were just talking about Sodom's first sin, basically.
Yeah.
Which I found incredible. And he's pulling from the book of Ezekiel here, and then referencing Genesis, talking about Sodom's first sin, basically, of being a glutton. This is on the spirit of gluttony. It's his fifth book in the Institutes. It's basically a talk on gluttony. And so he's kind of setting the stage, so to speak, of the different sin vices. So he goes through a lot of the vices, and he starts with gluttony, namely because it's like kind of the lowest appetite, right? And he's making the claim, his next one is on fornication. So he's making a claim, though, and kind of setting the trail, so to speak, of like, listen, if you don't have your appetites of food, like your basic necessities, your life-giving necessities, where your appetites are out of control, at that very basic human level, everything else is going to get out of whack. And namely, the next thing, which is, you know, your sexual appetites. And then what happens after that? Like, sins of fraud, like avarice and greed, and then sloth, and like he just goes through all of these, and he says, but like basically the first one is gluttony, mm-hmm. because it's a lack of temperance, it's a lack of being able to temper your lowest level appetites, which is why he says, if I had to guess, before I read this and said like, well, what was the, if we're talking about excessiveness, what would be the first sin of Sodom? I would have been like, well, probably sobriety. No, probably sobriety first.
Okay, yeah, I mean.
Like, probably they were drinking a bunch of wine. Maybe, yeah. And that led to, you know, your will being thrown out the...
Bad choices. Yeah.
But he actually makes the claim of bread. And so he goes on to say...
The pernicious bread.
The pernicious bread. That... He lays out all of the benefits of fasting and how fasting and temperance looks so different for so different people in different states of life, right? That the monk fasting looks very different than the layman's fasting. And he even talks about how as a layman, if you're a manual labor worker, that you have to have calories to do your job.
For the sake of your vocation, yeah.
And so he says, like, instead of going 2 or 3 days without fasting or without food, which he actually subscribes some of the monks to do, mm-hmm. he says, instead of that, have food, but don't make it pleasurable to the taste.
Don't eat the food you want.
Make it utilitarian, basically. Strictly utilitarian. You know, he says, basically, boil a pot of beans with no spices, and eat that. And eat it till you're full. Mm-hmm. Eat it, you know, obviously don't eat too much. You're not going to because it's not like something.
Eat a healthy amount.
Eat a healthy amount. But he just talks about how that, he says, whoever is unable to check their desires of gluttony will be incapable of curbing their urges of burning lust. The chastity of an inner man is discerned in the perfection of temperance.
Yeah, so I think another way to say this applies to both your appetites for food and your sexual appetites. If you can't say no, your yes means nothing. Mm-hmm. This is particularly true when it comes to the marital embrace.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you can even draw this out even in business, right? So if you're just constantly saying yes to everything. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as a sales guy, if you're just saying yes to everything, then your yes actually means nothing.
Yeah, right.
If you actually say, like, no, we can't do this, mm-hmm. but we can do this, then it's like, oh, okay, well, his yes means something here.
Yeah, so got a line here in my notes that pleasure clouds judgment faster than pain. Pleasure clouds your judgment faster than pain. A man rarely ruins his life because of suffering. He ruins it because of indulgence. Certainly, okay, so certainly there's scenarios you can think of where like great suffering has actually been this huge trial in people's life. And, you know, but how for every one of those, there's 1,000 people who ruin their life because they give in to, you know.
Well, they're not happy, right? They're not truly happy because... They're trying to fulfill, and I, you know, how many times have we done this? You know, trying to make a, you know, oh, I'm going to have so much a great time. You do X, Y, or Z, and then the next day you're like, oh, I can't believe I did that. That was so stupid.
Oh, yeah.
But we see this all the time. So why is it, though, that suffering is what doesn't cloud the judgment.
Well, I think suffering actually has a way of focusing the mind.
Okay, this is exactly what I was going to say.
That when you're in suffering, it actually wakes you up and it makes you think, you know, it actually causes you to be, assuming we're talking about like a reasonable amount of suffering, you know, not an overwhelming amount of suffering, but if we're talking about a nice temperate level of suffering here, it has a way of focusing your intellect and causing you to be incredibly rational, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know that only reason will lead you to end this suffering, okay? Mm-hmm. That you have to use your mind. It's like, why am I suffering? What is going on? I need to figure this out, right? So on the one hand, it's just there's a natural response to it, but it does, you know,
draw you out of yourself,
but
right?
Grace perfects our nature. So it kind of starts on this level of nature. So I think that's one element, is that suffering really does, it has a focusing effect on us.
Absolutely. And it's those exact moments and places in which Christ came and endured the cross,
mm-hmm.
so that we would never have to bear these sufferings alone.
Yeah. And I think it's especially true, like what you're saying, when the suffering is voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That because now that suffering, well, it's bringing this focusing effect to your mind, and you know that you're doing it with a goal in mind, right? Like, I'm doing this, you know, in reparation for my sins, or, as an offering for my family, or, you know, whatever it is. And so it really does, now all of a sudden you're kind of stacking things here. One, you have this focus on your family, or focus on penance, you know, whatever it is. And you're able to now pursue these things in this sort of like hyper-focused way.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually has a way of kind of elevating your mind around these things that you're doing. And, you know, that's only going to help you be better at those things,
yeah,
that you're pursuing.
Yeah, there's a priest, Father Anselm Stolz, and we did an episode on this probably a year or two ago. He has a book called A Christian Asceticism, and he has a line in there that I think is just, I meditate on often, especially during the Lenten time periods or whenever you have a heavy cross that you're having to embrace. He says, the ascetic life is not something apart, set apart. Oh, sorry. I wanted to make sure. Oh, dang it. That's not the right one. Oh, okay. Here it is. I'm sorry. I have a whole note. My note section on my phone is always like these lines that I've pulled from books that, yeah, I really, really like. And that's not the one I was thinking of. Here, this is the one he says.
I'm sure the other one was good too.
Yeah, but this is the one I was thinking of. He says, the ascetic life leads to contemplation, and all ascetic practices is secondary to that goal. Contemplation leads to union with God, and the spiritual being attainable by the Spirit, and draws us towards divinization. So the ascet, like when you have self-imposed ascetic lifestyles, like the Lenten season, the actual suffering itself is a secondary goal. All ascetic practices, the primary goal is contemplation.
Right. I mean, really, that's the goal of the entire life.
Of our entire life.
I mean, like, absolutely everything you do ultimately ought to be oriented towards
the contemplative
life.
Right. Right.
Which is hard to see sometimes.
Well, it's especially during
Lent. You step back and you think about it, it's true.
As a guy, so I'm very type A, very goal setting. Like, and like once I set goals, I want to attain them, and I want to, like, you know, I want to see it to the end. I want to, like, I'm a rule follower. I want to, mm-hmm. I want to do, like, if I say I'm going to do X, I'm going to do X. And I can find myself in the mind frame of, especially during Lent, of trying to achieve the thing that I'm giving up, or the sacrifices that I'm doing, as the goal. and like saying like, yes, I did it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know,
I took a cold shower.
These 40 days I was going to do this thing that was going to be difficult. And I did that.
I am awesome.
Which is not the right.
Yeah.
But it's very easy. And it's almost sometimes for men who desire, you know, a challenge, who want to push themselves, who want, you know, to be a better man, a lot of the natural side effects of denying oneself is, from a natural perspective, becoming a better man.
Sure. Like, there's, no, absolutely it is.
Like, and
but you got to be careful, because can't you just hear Wormtongue saying like...
Wormwood.
Wormwood, I'm sorry. Yeah, I've been reading The Lord of the Rings. Wormwood telling, you know, like, yes, make sure he focuses on his own achievement, right? And how he has done something great, and make sure he's focusing on himself, right? You know,
when these things are all about, you know, the growth and humility, the need and the absolute need that we have for Christ in our lives, and being able to deny ourselves certain things quiets who we are so that we can become more like him.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Right. That is the goal.
That's why we receive the Eucharist every week.
Yes. All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're sitting here talking about temperance. Like so many of the virtues, it spans the scope of human existence, right? That there is no moment when you're not being temperate. Okay? Some of virtues,
your seventh cupcake.
Okay,
is a moment.
But see, you ought to be being temperate. Like, even
your 13th cupcake ball, probably.
Yeah, so we've clearly gone off. We've wandered into foreign territory.
Maybe foreign.
Yeah, bad. Oh, I know. I know my way around this wood real well. Oh yeah, I've taken a nap over there. Yeah. I actually built a summer home just around this ledge. But there are other virtues like honesty that, like, you know, you're just not, while the honest person is always an honest person, right? That even when he's sleeping, he's still honest. He's not being honest necessarily all the time, but temperance is one of those things because it does involve everything. You know, you can be intemperate with anything. Even with your prayer time, you can have too much prayer time in your life. Okay, you know, if you, it's like you have a family, you should be going to work. You know,
yeah, depending on what you mean by that,
you're losing your job because you're spending too. You know what I mean?
And we should always pray without ceasing. However,
yeah. So you mean we're talking about, you know, weird cases, but it's possible. So anyway, it's just one of those. It's one of those virtues that is all spanning, you know. We've been talking about, you know, this hierarchy sort of where temperance fits into your life and about our nature as human beings. So just to put that in perspective, we have God who has, you know, created us.
It's hard to start like saying, putting it in perspective. We have the infinite.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, sometimes you got to put it somewhere. Okay. So he's given to us a reason. And below that, we have a will.
To act in accord with reason.
Correct. So the reason is above the will, so that it informs.
To choose reason.
That's right. And then below our will is our passions.
Mm-hmm.
And and then we're sitting here in a body, okay? And in our body is all of these things, okay? So that's the hierarchy. What temperance does is make sure that each one of those things, first of all, is in that order, okay, that we don't put, for instance, our will below our passions, okay, that we don't, because often that is in fact what we do, where right. We flip-flop them and we make the higher, the servant of the lower.
Right. We have a our passion is inflamed in either sexual desire or, you know, sobriety, drink, food, whatever it is, and we choose that over sobriety or chastity or honesty or whatever it is, because we desire that thing.
So temperance isn't the virtue by which we chastise the body. That's penance, okay? But we do chastise the body. We do fast. We do say no to things in order to make sure that we have this clarity of mind so that we are embracing proper temperance, so that, because we want each of these things, you know, I said God, reason, will, passion, body. We want each to serve the higher. So we want our body to serve our passions properly, okay? Because we want those passions to be ordered right. Mm-hmm. So we, and then we want our passions to be assisting our will, okay? So we want to have well-ordered passions so that our will doesn't have to wrestle. We want, because that will help inform our will.
And choose.
Yes, so that we desire the right things. Mm-hmm. So that we have our reason. Because back to Sodom and Gomorrah, this is exactly what happened to them. Okay, so they didn't chastise their flesh. They didn't make sure, they didn't orient their body to temperance. And so because of that, their passions got all out of whack. And that poisoned their will. And all of a sudden they desired that which they ought not, which in turn distorted their reason. So now all of a sudden, you know, they're sitting here committing these abominations of the flesh, and they have rationalized it. Mm-hmm. That, oh, this is good, right? It's because it started at this lowest level of what do I do with my body?
And a lot of times I think we can see this, that you go down these rabbit holes in the spiritual life where you are tempted by, you're tempted by something and you're like, oh, well, I'll just think about that temptation for just a second longer. And then later on, you catch yourself like saying, like, oh, well, I'll just kind of do this just for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, and then after that, it's like, oh, well, I'll just go ahead. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. I'll just go ahead and do it. And then like 45 minutes ago, you were sitting there thinking like, I would never do this.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've just rationalized this thing that you would have never done 45 minutes ago.
Right.
But it's because you let your passions take over your will and cloud your judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And you choose to be an idiot.
And that whole thing that you just described can happen to you so quickly. You know, you can give in, you can make a choice, and that whole domino effect it's unbelievable how fast you can go from thinking rightly about something to all of a sudden it's like, this just doesn't seem like that big of a deal, you know?
The thing about sin, it's
just not that big of a deal, you know?
The thing about the, you know, spiritual warfare is that the thing that the evil one has to play with is time. And so he actually doesn't even care if it's quick or if it's long. If it takes you a long time to do it or a short time to do it.
No, he doesn't care.
He just wants you to do it. And so while you're right, I think that the easiest examples can be thought about, you know, in quick things.
Mm-hmm. But he will strike when the iron is hot if you let him. That's what I mean. It's like, hey, if you open up this door, he will push the envelope as far as the envelope can be pushed.
Even if it's 10, 15, 20 years later, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
sometimes,
I agree.
I mean, sometimes the choices that you make that you're like, well, this isn't that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you let it fester and you keep going, and you keep going and keep going. And then 15, 20 years later, you're trying to rationalize why this sin is no longer a sin. Like, well, I love this person. I have to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, surely our Lord wouldn't want me to suffer, wouldn't want me to be in love, wouldn't want me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like he wants me to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard this story on, you know, and I've said this to myself before, you know, it's like, well, the Lord wants me to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, our Lord wants you to be with him because ultimately that is what's going to make you happy.
The Lord wants you to be holy.
Right, because that's what he created you for, and that's what you, that is the telos, that is the end of man, is to be with him.
He doesn't actually care at all about your version of happiness.
Because your version of happiness is very short-sighted.
It's actually not that great. You know, it's kind of boring.
Compared to
what he has in mind for you, yeah.
Right. So yeah. So I just wanted to like go the other route and say like, yes, it's very easy, I think, to think about those short-term quick things, but it's much more difficult to see the long-term
Absolutely.
Because that's actually what clouds your judgment, because it takes you so long that you've rationalized it for so long that you're able to allow those appetites or allow your will to weaken to where you choose sin over him.
Yeah, so I think one of the things to pursue in life, especially if as dads we're thinking about, how do we teach this to our kids? I think one of the practical ways we can do this is by simply teaching them the benefit of delayed gratification.
Have you done the you can have put the two M&Ms in front of them, say you can eat these right now, or if you wait 5 minutes, you get 5 M&Ms.
I haven't done that exercise. I've seen the YouTube videos.
I've done it.
And they're very funny to watch.
I've done it with my kids.
Of the kids.
When they were younger.
Oh, I'm definitely eating these right now. Yeah. I don't even really know how many 5 is, but I see these here and these are going down. You know? They're just funny to watch.
It's funny to see the different, because your kids are so different, their personalities are so different, mm-hmm. how some doesn't bother them at all. They can wait. And some are like, there's just no option of not eating those two M&Ms right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But whatever it is you do, teaching your kids delayed gratification and about that there is a reason why you might not always just do immediately what you want, right? And for them to learn that lesson of, hey, this was worth waiting for.
Mm.
That, I think, is sort of the nascent lesson in temperance, okay? Because, very often that's what it comes down to. There's this good that's in front of me right now. And ultimately, that's what it always is. But I want to say, I don't want to, if I'm sitting here holding these gifts that the Lord has given me, I have to drop some of them to reach out to take this lower good, okay? And I want to say no to that so that I can ultimately say yes to the goods of heaven. That's really what we're talking about here. So we keep our body oriented towards that heavenly reality.
That's what I strive for every day.
Yeah.
And fail at a lot.
A percentage. There's a number. We don't, it's one of the numbers. It's out there.
It's definitely there.
A couple other things I want to say after the break. So if you're listening.
After the episode.
After the episode, because this is it. So make sure to subscribe to the podcast.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus. So, I thought that was a good way to end the episode, just on like,
just for you, the listener, who's thinking how we felt about ending
good,
the episode.
Well, I don't always have like a, hey, here's something really good, practical way to for your kids to, but I felt like, that was a good one.
Way to go, man.
Thank you. So we're here in Lent, and I do feel like Lent is the time of no, like Lent is the season of no. It's a no so that you can say yes. We've already kind of established that. But it is like, you have to eventually, you do have to say no
mm-hmm.
before you can say yes. There has to be the no. So.
There's no feast without a fast.
That's right. So we're in that period of saying no. It's not just to say no. We're saying no because we know Easter is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we want to get our yes ready.
Easter's coming.
And that's what we're doing. We're getting those yeses ready, So part of temperance, which we haven't talked about yet, is the feasting. Okay, the temperate man feasts well because, that's that is actually, feasting is the heavenly reality. Okay, so it's actually more important to feast well than it is to fast, because heavenly realities are more important than earthly realities, right? And so there is no fasting in heaven. It's this great feast. Of course, in this life, we need the fast. We won't feast well if we don't have this season of fasting. This is one of the great things that our Protestant brothers and sisters have lost. They totally, over the years, have just ejected the penitential seasons of the year, right? So there's no, in America, there is no Advent. Is a pro, you know, mostly a Protestant culture. It's just Christmas, and then on December 26th, Christmas season is over, right? So they just totally got rid of all preparations. You know, some of them still do Lent, but it's so crucial that you do this. Otherwise, you're just never going to feast well, right? If you can't prepare, if you don't have this preparation, then it's just going to be, it gets gluttonous quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, you know, I think probably people who are listening are, you know, giving up things for Lent, but make sure, I think that we have to make sure we're doing this for a reason. Like, it's not just to satisfy, check some Lenten box, okay? You know, that, oh, it's Lent, so, you know, I'm not eating sweets. Not, you know, I'm not drinking alcohol. Why? I don't know.
I'm going to lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, as well, I don't know. It's Lent. It's what we do. I'm supposed to do it, right? That hopefully you remember, if you've given up sweets, let's say, when you have this opportunity, someone's made cookies and you're not going to eat one. That's the opportunity to pray. So, you know, I like to attach intentions behind the things that I do. So, you know, doing Exodus 90, my cold showers I offer up for the conversion of my little brother,
mm-hmm.
right? And just, it really humanizes a lot of these things, and it's not just, you know, mindless suffering.
Right.
So that to me adds an important element to temperance. When, if you're saying no, you're saying no with a yes. Okay, so it's like very material. It's very, I know exactly why I'm doing this.
I find that a good rule, this may not be the case for everybody. This may just be a looking glass into my spiritual life. But I find that a good judge of whether or not I'm being temperate is not how I fast, but actually how I feast.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that when it is Sunday, a mini Easter, am I, like, what, let's just say I gave up sweets for Lent on Sunday. Am I just, like, eating all the sweets because, like, it's Sunday and I'm not going to be able to do it the next 6 days?
It's my day to do
it's
it.
It's my day to do it. And yeah, so, like, yeah. Am I just, you know, stopping off and getting Skittles at the gas station because, like, you know, like, well, this
which
is my day.
Which you would have never done before.
Right. Or have the extra piece of cake, or, you know, just fill the day with those things because it's the day to do it.
Mm-hmm.
When I feel like that I've grown a little bit in intemperance is when I am able to say on the days that we are not fasting, where I can enjoy that thing one time.
Right, yeah, in just a regular amount. Dude, the first time we did Exodus, I remember doing this on a Sunday, getting ready for bed, and literally saying, like, oh, wait, I should have, like, a Snickers bar. And I literally was, like, eating a Snickers bar.
You're, like, falling asleep with, Snickers.
I had already been eating sweets, throughout the day, but it was, like, I was in an agitated state of, like, almost a panic of, like, wait, but I should eat And I did, I like went and had a candy bar right before bed.
You like fall asleep with a candy bar in your mouth. You wake up and you're like, no, it's a fast day. You're spitting it out.
And it's like, man, that's the behavior of a man with a problem, right? You know, right there. But it's like, I didn't behave that way when it wasn't Exodus 90, you know?
Right.
And so also I felt like the fast brought out the, it really shined a light.
Right. This is what, this
on
is what,
that problem.
And this is what fasting does, right? It sharpens your spiritual vision,
mm-hmm.
on the problems that you actually have that you're like, I don't have any problems.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm like, candy is not something that I have to struggle with.
Until you take it away.
Until you take it away.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize like, well, I just had like 4 pounds of gummy bears. So maybe it is a problem, you know? Like, okay, maybe that is something that I'm attached to.
Yeah, all of a sudden you realize like, maybe that's disorder. Not normal.
Yeah. So.
Healthy amount of everything.
Mastery before glory.